The Great Canadian Talk Show.
It was only a couple of watts, but I brought the truth to everyone within three blocks of the west side of campus.
No way! Yes way!
And now, let's get right down to business with Marty Gold.
Welcome to the Great Canadian Talk Show podcast. Look at that, episode 28 already of season 4. I'm Marty Gold. Thank you for joining us. We're going to continue to, of course, remind you, the longtime regular listeners, the new listeners that have joined us, those that are coming, picking up along the way, that it's fundraising season. There's a reason for it. There is no foundation money, no family money. There's no great resources behind this effort to ensure that there's some sort of alternative platform for your voice to be heard, for alternative coverage in Winnipeg, for analysis and investigation that is unlike anything the mainstream media can or will generate. I bring forward information, perspectives, insight that is born of very specialized and particular training that I got many decades ago from the so-called old-timers, those who didn't go to school to become journalists, those who learned it in the field, as did I. And this gives us an advantage in terms of what we do because we're tuned into you. We're able to reflect your experiences, your own insights and lived experience, your personal knowledge, institutional memory. We bring those to the fore when we cover public affairs. We talk about public officials. And we talk about, as I will today, the public broadcaster. CBC is going to make it on today. So please, by all means, contact me directly, martygoldlive@gmail.com, or go to the donate page on actionline.ca and send something along. Let's keep this rolling. Still need about $2,000 by April 1st. And this is to go towards catching up on the costs, various upgrades that we want to do, including adding audio features and in particular, what would be Action Line reports. Not quite the Action Line memo, mind you, although I'd like to move towards that as well. But for instance, you know, today's episode, more so than what I would consider, really an episode of the Great Canadian Talk Show podcast, these topics today would fit better, in my opinion, if I were able to set them aside and use them as part of a different audio series, as Action Line commentaries, so to speak, following up in the tradition of Peter Warren, getting right down to business. So I'm going to get right down to business with this episode. Going to hear from a listener. I'm going to read you an email from a listener, rather, more accurately. And that it turns out that CBC has woken up from their slumber, the first media outlet that I can tell, that figured out what was going on with Bell MTS and the workforce in Brandon that we reported on before the end of February. Actually, first one story about the notion of layoffs and then the effects specifically in Brandon, CBC waking up to that. I'm going to get to that. And then in part two, the meat and potatoes of this episode, as we said, when the whole concept of closing off the access to the concourse underground at Portage in Maine. What was our message, first and foremost? Portage in Maine cheerleaders better saddle up for a fight. And that's exactly what's happening. I'll get to that, including a note that I got from one of the leading figures in fighting this concept of closing off access to the access underground to the four corners, questions about the pricing of the different elements, and in my opinion, CBC and perhaps some other media outlets reporting less than honestly and with a particular urbanist bias, and I'll be getting into that in part two of this podcast. Just a reminder, this work that we do is entirely funded by your support. Believe me, the last thing that Justin Trudeau's going to do, first of all, last thing I'm ever going to do is agree to be licensed by Justin Trudeau or any government to pass some sort of test that that they provide with regards to my credentials or my right to access an audience, or your right to hear the kind of journalism that we put forward. It's easier than ever to make a contribution and help us continue to serve the public. What we used to call, in the newspaper business, it's a letter to the editor. We used to call on radio, that would be an LTE. In this case, an LTME. Letter to me, with regards to a recent podcast in which we discussed the dismal results of the downtown safety survey and how it reflects on the police chief, not so much on the police service itself. Marty wrote, a regular longtime listener. If it's possible to be shocked without being surprised, I was shocked to hear on your latest podcast that only 10% of men feel safe in downtown Winnipeg at night. I'm one of those men. I generally feel like I could handle myself well in a street fight, but I don't want to increase my chances of getting into a street fight, and that's why I think what I think I am doing anytime I go downtown. In other words, anytime you go downtown, you're taking a chance. That's what he's saying. This would be with regard to our podcast of May the 14th, where we referenced mayhem at Health Sciences Center, the Forks, and on the buses. This listener continues, who wants to be in a situation where you're confronted by several youth wielding machetes, bear spray, and or brass knuckles? At that point, isn't a street fight. It's life or death combat. Winnipeg Police Chief Danny Smythe, sounding defeated, said the recent spate of vicious robberies and assaults were committed by just a few teens known to each other and all coming from foster care or group homes. Beside the question of how these kids are able to procure machetes and such while in care, Chief Smythe seems completely at a loss as to how to stem the rise of mad dog rage. Other than saying the thuglings were kids in care, Smythe didn't identify them in any other way. This letter writer going on to point out that the Manitoba Advocate for Children and Youth directly identified these kids by telling CBC they're kids who suffer, quote, the intergenerational effects of colonization. This is woke social code for Indigenous people. If only 10% of men feel safe downtown at night, maybe it's because 90% of men look like the colonizers and don't want to be targeted by such kids weaned on nothing but neglect and contempt for society. Pointing out that the children's advocate blames society for these kids' violence, while at the same time depicting them as victims of society, whatever anger these kids might have about their derelict or absent parents can be blamed on the colonizers, and in that way justifies their brutal violence. We're going to continue to report on these factors, that at night, 10% of men and 5% of women feel safe. We're going to continue to urge your public servants, that being your elected representatives and the bureaucracies, and Chief Smythe to do something. Now, Chief Smythe referenced the deficiencies in the Department of Family Services. Are they just called Department of Family still? And foster care, the resources allotted to foster situations. And here we have Nanny Fontaine flitting off to New York while in the middle of closing homes that have taken in the most difficult kids under the worst of circumstances, and deciding to close those homes down with no real plan for where those kids to go, further traumatizing those kids. So I'm going to be talking about one of our favorite topics, Nanny Fontaine, Her Royal Highness. Be talking about her in the over the course of the next week or so. You're going to want to tune in for that. Smythe's criticism of the foster care system. You know, without criticizing necessarily, he was the people who try to provide the care to the kids. And I understand how he's trying to thread that needle a little bit. He was also trying not to sound critical of Nanny Fontaine. And there's much speculation as to why those two seem to avoid criticizing each other. I'll again get to that in a future podcast. But he made an important points about the deficiencies in foster care. That's an example of the kind of thing I'm going to be looking at in an upcoming episode. I'm also, in an upcoming episode, going to be following up on matters involving the Unifor local here in Manitoba, in Winnipeg, and the loss of jobs. But lo and behold, I have to mention this, Lo and behold, this weekend, CBC woke up. Now, let me just check the date on this story. March 16th, Saturday at 6 a.m. Now, when did I first cover the Brandon angle? Let's take a look at that. February 26th, Bell Tiesta dropped the axe on Brandon on Canada Day. So it took them 18 days, all those highly paid professional journalists, and it took them 18 days to cover what I reported, my exclusive from the end of, before the end of February, in a story that barely colored in all the squares. Now, what did this story report? What did it add to my two reports? One of the initial one was a couple days prior to the news about Brandon was about how Bell MTS was a hot mess as layoffs loom. What did they add to the reports? Well, not much. Here's how CBC described it. The job changes are not being called forced layoffs, but voluntary retirements where staff are offered a payment package to walk away from their jobs. This actually quoting a union representative. Union members were told that Bell MTS would like to keep all call centers under the same umbrella in Winnipeg. Now, what wasn't reported? Let's extract from the very first story that I ran with regards to the telecom side of the Bell Corporation engaging in belt tightening at the expense of unionized employees. Looks to me, Bell has found a way to get around some of the obstacles when it comes to getting rid of some of the Bell MTS employees, if you know what I mean. That angle completely missing from the CBC story. And as another source told us, they don't mind their contracted out workers working all over the world, but God forbid a local employee works at home. Not a mention by CBC of the degree of contracting out. Don't you find that kind of odd that they would only tell half the story? And you know what part of the story they didn't tell at all? How this exposes the hypocrisy of Bell touting their Let's Talk Day, claiming to care about mental health, and inflicting these kind of unnecessary job losses on local employees. The CBC added almost nothing. Oh, well, there's one thing, that the union was in Ottawa, is going to be in Ottawa on Tuesday, seeking to improve, to find a better package. Well, that's kind of ridiculous in a way. I guess maybe the union thinks that they're going to try to appeal to Justin Trudeau's vitriolic response to the cuts in the media division of Bell that preceded this plan to cut in the telecom sector. Part of a, was it 48,000 jobs, I think? 4,800 rather, they were looking to cut. Now, maybe they're relying on Trudeau already having blasted Bell that they think that this is, they're going to get him to jump on the wagon. I don't see that he sees headlines in sticking up for telecom workers, because telecom workers aren't the ones that work in the media outlets that he counts on for favorable one-sided coverage of his abhorrent administration in Ottawa. There's no real headlines in Justin Trudeau speaking out for 25 or 30 workers in Brandon, some of whom may be forced to move, given the choice between moving or having no job on Canada Day, having lived in Brandon, you know, and having homes there and kids in school there. I don't think Justin Trudeau is going to see any great political advantage in defending the people of Brandon that I, as far as I can remember, has never elected a Liberal MP. Now, you think the Liberal MPs in Manitoba, you think that they'd actually pay attention to what's going on with this? No. And CBC wasn't either. They were so busy ignoring rural Manitoba, ignoring union jobs being sacrificed, ignoring how contracted workers, how this plays into the collective bargaining agreement. And again, going to Trudeau for relief, I don't really understand, because he didn't negotiate the collective bargaining agreement. Maybe he can extend EI or something for some of these workers. I really don't get that. But CBC not doing any digging. But hey, at least after 18 days, they woke up. They realized there was a story there. They should be embarrassed that it took them that long, but I'm sure they're going to nominate themselves for an award. In the meantime, they've been providing some coverage on Portage and Maine, replete with a few doses of misinformation, or is it disinformation, when it comes to the financial circumstances. CBC doing a bit to cloud the waters and to kind of downplay the concerns that have been raised by those who are opposing the rush to close off access to the concourse downstairs. I'm going to take a look at how CBC, other media have covered it, try to bring together the whole picture. I've done a number of podcasts about the proposed closure of Portage and Main and what's the hurry. I'm going to have an extensive report right up after this break. We're going to go a little deeper into Portage and Main and the sudden appearance of people who are not cheerleaders for Mayor Gillingham's plan, and how under scrutiny his numbers, his proposed savings, the way this has been sold to the media, who seem to buy it, just swallow it whole. We'll see if this road becomes any more difficult for Mayor Gillingham as the rubber meets the road, so to speak, this week at Council. Back with more right after this.
If you have a story tip, an interview idea, or information the public needs to know, let us know. The Great Canadian Talk Show. Email martygoldlive@gmail.com. TGCTS. Old-fashioned investigative reporting that matters.
This episode of the Great Canadian Talk Show podcast is sponsored by Jamrock Security, protecting your family, your business, and your community. Call 204-880-1564 or go to jamrocksecurity.ca, your trusted security partner.
For your home renovation and repair needs, call PKP. For over 20 years, we've built trusted relationships in the North End, West Kildonan, Garden City, and the Maples. Buying a refurbished home? We'll do your pre-purchase inspection and make sure you get what you're paying for. Go to our Facebook page, PKP Renovations and Repairs, or call us 204-297-5446. That's 204-297-5446. PKP Renovations and Repairs.
The Great Canadian Talk Show is brought to you by The Hive Hair Company. From classic to funky, the styles of your life are at The Hive in the heart of the Osborne Village at 175 Osborne. Call 452-4483 or online, thehivehaircompany.com.
Is your business plagued by thefts and break-ins? Is your residential property under siege by out-of-control crime and vandalism? You need effective safety measures to protect your property. Jamrock Security can help you today. We have the expertise to deliver the right solutions and get your security problems under control. Call 204-880-1564 or contact our website, jamrocksecurity.ca. Do security. Do it smart. Jamrock Security.
This episode of the Great Canadian Talk Show is sponsored by PKP Renovations and Repairs. We take pride in the neighborhoods we work in, serving the North End, West Kildonan, and the Maples Garden City area for over 20 years. Call 204-297-5446 or email us at info@pkprenovations.com. We help make sure Winnipeg has good homes for good people.
It's like beefs and bouquets. Well, not really.
I don't think this is a Gold Star award that Winnipeg should be proud of when you're featured in the Federal Conservatives' What Went Wrong in Canada scenarios, and Winnipeg's at the top of the class. So it's not something of a badge of honor, I think, for the current leadership at City Hall to wear.
You're listening to the Great Canadian Talk Show with Marty Gold.
Perhaps you or Peter Warren could tell us.
On actionline.ca.
Your comments, your news tips, your donations via Interact, or just generally wanting to talk to me, martygoldlive@gmail.com. Every episode of the Great Canadian Talk Show podcast is available on actionline.ca. Under the podcast tab, this is the home of independent public affairs coverage in Winnipeg. And I do my best to bring you a steady stream of insight, information, and investigations that cannot be matched by the mainstream media, by government-funded media, by legacy media, or as somebody referred to it this weekend, legacy propaganda. In the course of covering Portage in Maine, and it was just really over the course of this weekend that I realized some things that were reverberating in the background. I had gotten a note from someone that I literally have no recollection outside of a brief in passing hello to. I never had anything that I can recall to do with Judy Wajchuk in her time at CBC. I didn't even realize, I didn't remember she had moved on to Global for a while before, as I understand it, retiring from the media business around 1994. At least that's when she left Global. I didn't remember her stint at Global, but I would have known her during her time around CBC, around the newsroom, around 24 Hours, because I was around. I did some freelance work, two freelance stories, actually, if I'm remembering correctly. Well, one for the I-Team, and I also did something for the entertainment division that was in the Mall Center Hotel. I mean, that was the first thing I actually ever did in media. So over the course of time, I would have, bumped into her, but never dealt with her on a story that I can remember. I don't remember Judy Wajchuk ever interviewing me at City Hall or whatever. So I'm familiar with her, and I guess she's familiar with me because I got a private note from her. Marty, I urge you to read my Facebook page, which is awash with the Portage and Main Concourse closing issue. It makes no sense. Read the post, examine the documentation, and ask yourself, what the hell is the mayor thinking? His own public service recommended keeping the concourse open and cost-sharing the bill, meaning with the other property owners around the corner. Now, the biggest motivation for Judy Wajchuk to proclaim her opposition to this is that her late husband, Bruce Head, who I also worked at CBC, but he was, I think, a graphic designer, and I might have met the guy once or twice, but I didn't know him. There is a 415-foot-long sculpted concrete wall that's the circular part, right, in that roundabout. That is the roundabout. And she wrote that city engineers will almost certainly find it cannot be saved and moved. That is the line that the mayor is using now. Oh, he's open to discussions. She also suggested online that it's an integral part of the load-bearing structural wall that runs around the concourse interior. I don't know that I've heard anybody discuss that. She discussed this issue with CBC. This wall is made up of 52 poured and molded concrete panels. Bruce Head did a lot of the work on this actually on site, which is, come to think of it, kind of amazing. So you have manufacture a number of those concrete panels. And I have an excerpt from a book that describes it. I'll throw that into the actionline.ca version of this podcast. So you'll be able to see that extensive quote about the design and I think a quote from the architectural firm as well. Let's take a minute. Just listen to what Judy Wajchuk said with regards to, just one big point that she made in her interview that, Judy talked about a number of points. And I have to admit that at first I thought that this was strictly about being, a widow upset about the potential loss of the crowning achievement of her husband's career, which I deeply respect. It turns out she's got a lot more points to make. But this is a very important point that she made in the CBC interview. Just take a listen.
And our cities are about...
That's somebody else community. For a second.
Wajchuk says before council makes a final decision, she wants to see further consultation with tenants at the intersection and reports showing how much it would cost to decommission the concourse and move the art.
This is a part of our cultural background and history. You don't bury it.
Well, okay. So you see, when this interview is done, she's still thinking this involves like backfilling and dumping concrete or rubble or whatever. And as we reported pretty much exclusively on the Great Canadian Talk Show podcast, that isn't exactly the plan. The idea is to wall it off, maintain access downstairs, for the your various public utilities, for instance. You can check out the podcast from March 11th, Walls to Seal Off Portage and Main Underground. I don't think Judy Wajcik was talking metaphorically. I don't think she understood that detail. But although it's not being buried, so to speak, it is being buried in that there's no contemplation. You know, they're not going to maintain that area in a manner that will be consistent with tourists being able to come downstairs and take a look at this artwork, right? Now, she went through the numbers, as she put it, the fuzzy numbers from the city report. And she then quoted from the city report, given the information now available on the cost of this work, this is from the report, it would be prudent to re-engage the property owners to confirm their willingness to proceed with such an agreement in order to extend the life of the concourse. And Wajcik pointing out, well, to confirm their willingness, tells her the property owners have been willing to pony up towards some of the costs of remediation. She then does some math. It's up to $50 million, likely more, to close the concourse, $73 million to repair it. Maybe $23 million gets saved. Now, I think we, in our first stab at this, had calculated maybe $13 million. Now, how do they carve out $415 feet of 12-foot-tall concrete pieces, as Wajcik describes it, if, as the mayor suggested, after some outcry, mostly from this furious widow, describing herself, somebody figures out how this artwork could be moved elsewhere, what would that cost? What would it cost? I'm no engineer, she says, but that sounds like a huge multi-million dollar feat to try to pull off. Carving out 415 feet of 12-foot-tall concrete pieces, hoist them up, cart them off someplace. I don't think somebody's waiting to buy it like the Queen's portrait from the old arena. The whole close the concourse, move the art thing would very likely match or even exceed, according to Judy Wajcik, the cost of repairs. One counselor, she wrote, cared enough to ask on my behalf, was there a report he could see on moving the art? No, there is not one, because nobody thought about it. Neither the 87-page, full Stantec authored report on this or the city's own executive summary even considered the possibility the concourse might be closed. And if it was, what about the art? So the consultant's report says nothing about decommissioning costs or about what to do with the art. So you may as well, says Judy Wajcik, just fix the damn thing and keep it open. Nobody's saying you can't also put up the pedestrian crosswalks on top. She also pointed out, and I mentioned this again in a recent podcast, that the mayor's office is floating, this is costing us an extra million a year, and in 40 years we'd have to redo the membrane, and that's $40 million in maintenance. Well, as she points out, Wajcik does, property owners could kick in $250,000 each from petty cash. And for comparison, for this $1 million a year, which I said, to the surprise of a source at City Hall, knowing I'm pretty... You know, I prefer to be pretty efficient with your dollars, with taxpayers' dollars. But $1 million a year to keep that open, to me, is like a rounding error. For comparison, it costs $1.6 million a year, she pointed out. City budget's $1.6 million a year for graffiti removal. She also communicated, as she put it, quote, the arts community is quietly gobsmacked by the gall of a mayor would happily bury an iconic piece of Western Canadian contemporary art. What did I say about the Portage Maine cheerleaders that they better saddle up for a fight? Here's where they got a fight. Now, she says the arts community is quietly gobsmacked. They don't want to fight because they don't want to bite the political hands that feed their grants and funding, as she puts it. Now, she also, Judy Wajcik, thanks an awful lot of people for literally coming out of the woodwork to support her, including her stepdaughter, her daughter, who have both gotten involved in this, all sorts of people giving her advice, email addresses. It was quite a little campaign. And she thanked her doctor, who doubled her blood pressure medication with instructions to return in 2 weeks. Been there, done that. I feel for you, Judy. Out there in the media, she wrote, I may look like what CBC News insultingly referred to the other day as one woman, and not just one woman. Now, she made her presentation, gave them hell for 10 minutes. And one of our listeners, a longtime loyal listener from the arts community, thanked her on her Facebook page. Any amount of pushback could change hearts and minds, he said. Sorry to see the chicken shit mayor walked out of the presentation right at the time you were on deck to speak. What a knob. That's one of our listeners' words. You know, I that caught my eye because there's an awful lot of times that people walk out of the city council chambers, and it's happened to me too, at very suspicious times when individuals come and have taken time from their day, unpaid, paying for their own parking or bus ride or whatever, to speak to council. And it's not the first time I've heard about Mayor Gillingham making himself absent at a convenient time. Waychuk responding to that listener, yeah, I saw that. And his buddy Janice Lukes had the gall to roast my stepdaughter for emailing her to protest the potential destruction of the art because they never said they'd do that. Well, Waychuk said, could that be because they didn't even know it was there until I told them? Well, I haven't seen what Janice Lukes wrote to this family member, but a roasting was certainly not in order. And just because the report doesn't say we will destroy the public art, it wasn't mentioned at all. So it looks like some of these cheerleaders, Gillingham and Lukes, have been caught with their proverbial pants down a little bit.
When you support the Great Canadian Talk Show, your donation makes sure that the investigations, the interviews, the fact-finding, the truth-telling can carry on. When you sponsor the Great Canadian Talk Show, you're telling the community that you think their stories matter. Our public affairs coverage continues to make a difference, challenging the slanted media narratives and giving a voice to the community. When you provide funding for the Great Canadian Talk Show, you're supporting old-fashioned investigative reporting that matters. Support TGCTS today.
Now, CBC, I mentioned CBC. I'm not going to play any more audio from them, but trust me on this. Their report, a couple of reports they had, one in particular and a written version of it, said work to replace the waterproof membrane underneath the intersection would cost $73 million. That is not true. And some media outlets keep reporting that $73 million. Matter of fact, this CBC report said a further $13 million would be required to demolish the barricades and install pedestrian crossings along with other upgrades. This might just be like sloppy writing by CBC. But Judy Waychuk isn't alone. And she also had started digging into the numbers. And the fact that the media is reporting this in a way that's inaccurate. And backing up Judy Waychuk. Now, she also said, I haven't seen proof of this, but she did mention online that apparently the downtown biz has asked the mayor to put the brakes on. And so has the Building Owners and Managers Association of Manitoba. Now, I'm going to say at the outset, the longtime executive director is Tom Thiessen, and I'm unclear if I know him or not, because many years ago, I wrote, I was a regular writer for a sports magazine, and I don't know if this is the same Tom that owned it. I think it is, because this Tom has a background with Baseball Manitoba. So I may know the guy. It may be a different Tom. I'm going to try to interview him regardless, but I assure you folks, if it's the same Tom, he treated me well, but I'm going to reflect what he said to council. And I'm not like trying to toot his horn. I think he's made some important points. If it's not the guy I know, well, you get the idea. I'm just trying to point out that, again, like with Judy Waychuk, these might be people I know, but not people I've ever been friends with, really. Just want to disclose, case the same time, yeah, I wrote articles for 2 years for him, and he gave me a big break in that regard, and they were really good sports articles about high school sports, amateur sports in Manitoba, blah, blah, blah. But his longtime job has been with the Building Owners and Managers Association of Manitoba, and they wrote a letter to council saying shutting down the concourse would be a step in the wrong direction. Now, Jeff Brawadi, who is the only EPC councillor to vote against the concourse closure, I assume because Brian Mays has read the writing on the wall, so to speak, Broady noted, quote, many groups are concerned with this out-of-the-blue closure scenario. At this point, no real work has been done to study the shuttering of the underground circus. Now, this downtown organization that represents businesses and stakeholders on the corner, I think there's one where the management company is on his board or something and they're against it, but the actual owners of this might be the Richardson building are actually sort of, well, they're for opening the intersection, but they didn't have an opinion on what should happen to the concourse. It's a little bit of tricky terrain, but he said that this is a consensus position and straightens out the media's disinformation about the numbers. While the overall project would cost $73 million, the membrane replacement cost alone is pegged to $29 million. And he says, and Judy Wajcik reflects this in her arguments, most of the remaining $44 million would still have to be spent, whether you close the concourse or not, on water main and sewer work, paving, lighting, trees and barricades, and traffic management. He said the city should have squirreled away money for a membrane replacement over the years, pointing out, as he said, a condo corporation has the good sense of putting money aside for a roof repair. These expenses don't come from out of the blue. I find the EPC decision very strange, and the mayor is only looking at one side. Now, there was an additional quote from in the Sun, I think from the letter. And again, this is where different media outlets take different approaches to these stories. Like the Free Press headline, building owners stunned by Portage and Main underground closure proposal. That's a good headline, by the way. That's something people will read that isn't clickbait. The letter, according to the Sun, said to the city, we think it's disingenuous, as Councillor Mays pointed out in his comments, to say, as Councillor Mays pointed out, that the city would actually save $73 million by closing the concourse, because that's completely not true. I'm not even sure how, I'm not quite sure where that came from. And it could be that somebody said something like that. One person who's chimed in on this is David Chartrand, the president of the Manitoba Métis Federation. They have bought the Bank of Montreal building on the southeast corner. He favors decommissioning the concourse, saying the solution, reviving downtown, he said the solution is to make changes. Now, among the changes that he wants is he says that their facility, it's been converted to a heritage center, is expected to host 1 million visitors annually. Oh, hold on right there. If you have 1 million visitors annually to that corner, to that building, I'm not going to get into whether that's a realistic number, but let's say he's right. You figure that almost every one of them is going to cross that corner once, because for every person that comes from the south side and walks back or whatever to the south side, you figure that some of these people are going to go back and forth through the corner. You're looking at adding, some of them will go three or four times across the corner. You're looking at adding 2 million pedestrian crossings, pedestrians on foot, crossing that intersection, and you think the concourse should be closed instead of giving people that option so traffic flow can be made? Like, what? That makes no sense. The mayor providing an argument to the Winnipeg Sun in a correspondence. Yeah, I guess this is where it comes from. The bottom line is repairing the concourse would cost at least $73 million now. Again, and going back to Thiessen, he said, well, no, some of this work, road work, etc., is going to be required anyways. Millions upon millions. The mayor arguing it'll cost $73 million now and hundreds of millions more in the future. We're talking about like 40 years from now. Mentioned the disrupting traffic for 5 years. It would severely undermine our efforts to revitalize downtown and launch our new transit network. Now, then he mentions, on top of that, he wrote, the city loses almost $1 million per year operating the concourse, as I mentioned, small potatoes, and actually competes with neighboring property owners in the commercial leasing market. They lease out like six spots. Some of whom, those businesses are ideally modeled to be in an underground concourse. So here he is, being in favor of free enterprise, being concerned with property owners, and yet, CTV reporting, again from Tom Thiessen, the city should be interested in keeping the concourse open. A lot of the properties around here, those that his organization represents, have their valuations based on access to the rest of downtown. Property valuations have a direct impact on tax assessments. I don't think the city is implying they can actually stand and lose tax money at this point in municipal coffers. Quite frankly, they would impact all Winnipeggers. You haven't heard that really reflected anywhere else in these discussions as things get rushed through. So there's going to be a council vote on Thursday. Just no matter how the media, CBC, some of the other outlets that are clearly beholden to the urban visionaries in town, no matter how they try to distort the facts, there is not just emotional arguments against it, but there's logical arguments against it. And in particular, this organization is representing the property owners, and I maintain right from the first podcast we did, this is going to adversely affect businesses on the east side of Maine in particular. Just the way I see how people will and won't move, I'm not sure people that are going to and from True North Square, because Chipman, and Chipman's in this deal somewhere, the Jets owner, they want to move, really. They entice businesses to move from Portage in Maine. So Chipman wouldn't want this open to benefit people of Portage, Maine. He wants that traffic, foot traffic, to come towards him, towards Carlton and Hargrave, right? And there are people that are speculating, well, you know, the mayor doesn't want this to be ongoing in the middle of a re-election campaign. And the one of the deficiencies, if you can put it that way, that Gillingham had in squeaking out a victory over Glenn Murray, one thing that, you know, everybody, every campaign noticed and was concerned about is that Glenn Murray had a lot of, how do we put this? A lot of, you know, the Winnipeg hierarchy establishment, blue blood support. And there's a question of whether, and they were all vote open kind of people, because Glenn Murray was a vote open kind of guy, wanted the intersection open to pedestrians. And so there's speculation. Is the mayor trying to garner support from people that supported Glenn Murray last time, big name supporters, so to speak, by making this move? Well, hearkening back to Judy Wachuk, she dug up something that Gail Asper told As It Happens last September when the report about Portage, Maine was released. Asper, having been, you know, a Bowman trumpeteer, not a Bowman trumpeteer, but a Glenn Murray trumpeteer, and a Bowman trumpeteer too. And we can blame Brian Bowman for a lot of this anyways. Because if money wasn't being squirreled away for the membrane, that happened on Brian Bowman's watch, or did not happen on Brian Bowman's watch. And in this commentary with As It Happens, she said, I've given a lot of thought about this. I think to be more welcoming to people, you have to give them the choice, meaning the choice between a concourse and upstairs. So even Gail Asper, in September, was talking about that there would still be a concourse. Whether Gail Asper, other of Winnipeg's hoity-toity high-enders, have directly or indirectly influenced the thinking of Mayor Gillingham and other councillors in this remains to be seen. But the potential loss in tax revenue from adjoining businesses has to be weighed. The effect on those businesses on the east side of Portage and Maine, in my estimation, has to be evaluated. I understand the traffic issues. I think the numbers are being fudged one way or the other in the way the media is reporting it. But especially the concept that the city would bury or discontinue access to that work of art. And I'm hardly from being the world's biggest art fan. We all know. I'm not lying when I say that generally I don't care about these things. But the point is, other people care. They care a lot. And if that's a load-bearing wall, what do you think you're going to do? And it's obvious the city put no thought into that part of this. So because it looks like a rush job, because it looks like it wasn't thoroughly thought through, regardless of how many times Mayor Gillingham says, well, there's no timeline on the closure, but there is. Because they want to line this up somehow with their fabulous new transit master plan that was also pushed through in 3 weeks. Boy, City Hall's heard a lot of this from the community. The battle for Happyland Park and Winnaqua Park, those pools, continued last Friday as well, with a good what for being given to counselors for these concepts, that concept of disenfranchising, disempooling neighborhoods that deserve that kind of infrastructure. And when some counselors say, yeah, but my neighborhood only has one, how many private swimming pools do you have in that ward compared to places like St. Boniface, around Happy Land Park, the Marion Corridor, or in Windsor Park? So sometimes they try to compare apples and apples, but it's really apples and oranges. It's good to see communities stand up. It's good to see them fight. It's good to see them give City Hall a piece of their mind. It'll be good to see City Hall listen. I'm going to continue to provide this information, this kind of analysis, an opportunity for these voices to be heard. And of course, whatever happens to Portage and Main is going to affect the good people of St. Boniface. And I'll continue to be a voice in particular for that neighborhood, since Matt Allard, who's busying himself with the pool file, but hasn't said a word about the effects of what could happen to Portage and Main with regards to access and egress to the St. Boniface neighborhood, and especially what happens if you got two or three or 4 million more foot crossings that'll affect traffic heading towards St. Boniface crossing Portage Avenue at Main Street. You don't get civics coverage like this anywhere else. I'm relying on your support. Send me an email. Go to the donate page. Contact me directly. Whatever you can do, whether it's $50, $100, or $500 or more, I will continue to put my nose to the grindstone, my shoulder to the wheel, and make sure that you have the information, the analysis. I'll compile these media reports and put together more fulsome reports so you can have the best information possible with which to represent your interests when dealing with your MP, your MLA, your city councilor, or the Winnipeg media. Coming up soon, more about Annie Fontaine, more about Bell MTS layoffs, more about crime courts and public safety with our regular updates, more of your feedback, and more of the Great Canadian Talk Show, continuing the tradition of representing you, because you have the power. Thank you for listening.
What the legacy media won't talk about.
They're too busy covering ribbon cuttings and other such things.
He will.
Winnipeg radio, it's moved more and more away from being dynamic, provocative, and closer to...
It's Marty Gold.
That's not the way it should be, especially with broadcast licenses issued by the CRTC, but that's their problem.
On the Great Canadian Talk Show podcast.
Not the power of CKY or CKRC, but we intend to try to match them in quality.
Thanks for listening to The Great Canadian Talk Show. If you want to email Marty, send it to tgcts1@gmail.com or follow him on Twitter @tgcts.